Opposed? Absent. Commissioner Hakeem P.A.?
Present.
And myself, Commissioner Hassan Bennett, is present. Next, we'll go on to Commissioner Business. First, we'll approve the agenda circulated that was circulated to all commissioners. Did all commissioners have a chance to review the agenda?
Commissioner Solomon here, yes.
Commissioner P.A.?
Commissioner P.A., yes.
So with that being called, do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
Just over the rack.
Commissioner P.A., motions to approve the agenda.
Does anyone second that motion?
Commissioner Solomon, I'll second.
We have a motion on the table. Will everybody in approval of the meeting agenda will say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Meeting agenda approved. Next, we'll go to the meeting minutes of July 2024. Do we have a motion to approve the meeting minutes for July 2024?
Motion to approve the meeting minutes from July 2024.
Okay, do we have any, does anyone second those meeting minutes?
Commissioner Solomon, I'll second.
Commissioner Solomon, the second minute. Everyone in favor of approving the meeting minutes, say aye.
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 Meeting minutes have been approved. Next on tonight's agenda will be the rescission of the commissioner bylaws. Tonight's Board of Commission will consider rescinding the bylaws which are currently in effect. In my opinion, the current bylaws, they do not accurately reflect the current work of the commission, and as opposed to the PAC, which came before us. These bylaws were adopted prior to the hiring of a general counsel, Catherine Twigg, to provide us with legal advice and ensuring the compliance with applicable law. I want to assure everyone that the commission, if the commission passes this motion to rescind the current bylaws, we will prioritize proposing new bylaws as soon as possible or in the near future. Right? Do we have any discussion on the bylaws or a motion? Commissioners, no motion, no discussion?
I think
I'm sorry, I raised my hand. I should have just unmuted myself. My apologies.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate, I know you touched on it, but I'm definitely with us internally operating. I think the bylaws are very crucial when it comes to day-to-day for us. And the ones that we currently have right now are not the ones that I recall at least revising or adding our comments as new commissioners, which we did a couple months ago when onboarding as new commissioners. So definitely in terms of our internal processes, I think it's important for us to stay on top of this and make sure that we revise them as soon as possible to ensure that we have structure moving forward in the commission.
So do we have a motion? You're on mute. You're on mute, Commissioner P.A.
You hear me now?
Yes.
All right, sorry. My phone is doing all kinds of things. Yes, can someone help me with the proper language again? I motion to
rescind.
Are we approving the rescind or our motions to rescind the current bylaws?
The proper language I figure would be our motion to rescind the bylaws. Commissioner P.A. has motion to rescind the bylaws. Do we have a second?
Commissioner Solomon here. I'll second.
Commissioner Solomon Solomon seconds. With that, I guess I'll go down the line. Commissioner Solomon, do you approve the motion to rescind the bylaws?
Yes.
Commissioner PA, do you approve the motion to rescind the bylaws?
Yes.
I approve the motion to rescind the bylaws. With that, the bylaws have been rescinded. Next, agency business. Our executive director, Tanya McClary, will present us with the Citizens Police Oversight Commission agency report. With that, Ms. Clary, would you take off?
Awesome. Well, good evening, everyone. Tanya McClary, the executive director for CPOC, and I'm excited to let you know what the office has been up to. So if we can start the slide presentation, that would be wonderful. So I want to remind the community about the mission of the Citizens Police Oversight Commission is to investigate the conduct, policies, and practices of the Philadelphia Police Department. And currently, CPOC receives complaints of police misconduct, audits and monitors internal affairs investigations, and police disciplinary processes, sits and votes on PBI panels at police discipline hearings, conducts oversight of police shootings, analyzes police data, develops policy recommendation report, and engages in outreach and training. Next slide. So for my executive director's report, I want to cover several topics. And the first that I wanted to cover with the commission as well as the community is about CPOC staffing. And so since May of 2024, CPOC has lost staff at all of its units except one, our administrative unit. And so, you know, I always like to talk about, you know, the one good thing about when you're a director, when you're the head, when people leave and go on and do big things, it's always a plus for you because I think it shows that you helped set a foundation. And so one of our staff has left to go to law school. Another one has left for a phenomenal position in DC. Another one has left to be the chief of staff with the sheriff's department. And we have some other people that are moving to director positions, et cetera. And so it has given us, you know, this makes us feel proud that we're able to say that the staff of CPOC is very excellent and is well sought after. The departures have given me a chance to work with the directors of the different units to see if there's any staffing structures in the office that can be adjusted to meet the current needs of the agency and to help us fulfill the requirements of legislation. One of the things I've been doing since I've started is to really sit through the legislation and look and see where there are places that we may need to beef up or to tone down, et cetera. And so it's always a lot easier when positions are empty to move things around. And so we will be looking to do that. As those changes are being proposed and are implemented, I will make sure that the commission is aware of the changes. Some of the potential changes in the office are the restructuring of the investigation unit. Our investigations unit director, Cato, and I have been talking about a different way to perhaps have the investigation unit function and be staffed, so we're discussing that. We're also discussing the development of a data unit. The legislation that had created CPOC has a very, very heavy focus on data. And so there's a chance that we may be actually able to start a data unit to look at those specific needs. And another thing that we are considering is restructuring the mediation program. One of the things that a mediation program really does, it literally helps bridge the gap between officers and community members. And so we haven't had that many mediation. And so I've had a lot of talk with the director that currently houses that. And so we're thinking creatively about ways to enhance that, ways to attract both community members and police officers to partake in that. And so you will probably see some restructures to the mediation program. And so those are kind of just the three that I want to lift up right now. There will probably be some more changes going down the pike as we develop as an agency, but I wanted to lift that up for the commission. And so I guess I'll stop there and see if any commissioners have any questions about CPOC and staffing. All right, next slide.
1 second.
Okay.
Before we continue, I would like to inform everyone that Commissioner Elder Du Bois has joined the meeting as of 6:22 p.m. She's on the meeting by a phone call. Elder, can you announce yourself?
Good evening, everyone. I'm sorry I'm late. I stopped this meeting. Just at 7.
All right. Has everyone heard? Can everyone hear Elder Melanie Du Bois? All right. Could you continue, Miss Executive Director McCleary?
Alexa, stop.
So we are in the process now of seating new commissioners. Currently, the commission has 4 to 5 vacant seats that need to be filled on the commission. And so over the next several months, CPOC staff will be working with City Council Member Curtis Jones' offices in an administrative capacity to help fill those vacancies. The call for applicants was sent out on August 2nd, and the application process will be open until August 23rd. And so we are really encouraging community members that if you feel called, if you feel like you have something that you can contribute to this commission, that we encourage you to apply. The application is available online, and there's also an option for people to be able to complete a paper copy of the application for submission. So we don't want technology to slow anything down, or people that don't have access to it. You can also get a paper copy of the application form and complete it that way. Currently, the application is available in English and in Spanish. We are going to work to translate it into at least one other language. So coming soon, hopefully by the end of this week or early next week, the application will also be in Mandarin. And so we also don't want language to be a barrier for people that may potentially want to apply to be a part of this commission. Next slide, please. In terms of the selection process, I always want to be clear that this is not a CPOC process. The selection process is composed of council and the mayor's office. So there are three city council people that are appointees to this selection committee, and also two from the mayor's office. And the selection panel is made up of civic and community leaders. And so listed below are the 5 people that will be actually reviewing the applications, conducting the interviews for people to potentially serve on the CPOC commission. And so Anton Moore, he's the president and founder of Unity in the Community and a commissioner on the Advisory Commission of African American Affairs. He was a mayoral appointee. The other mayoral appointee is Stanley Crawford, who is the founder and CEO of the Black Male Community Council of Philadelphia. So those two were appointed by the mayor. The other three are appointed by council. Bilal Kayun, who is the president of the Father's Day Rally Committee. Christina Vega, who is a community and school coordinator and domestic violence advocate. And Carolyn Stack, who is the director of legislative affairs for Councilmember Curtis Jones Jr. And so those will be the people that will be reviewing the applications, conducting the interviews, and eventually putting forward a slate. In terms of timeline, things always affect the timeline, but the vision, I think, is to hopefully have at least a slate of candidates by sometime in October. And so we will keep the commission updated as well as the community in terms of the process. But once again, if you feel called to it, if you feel like you have something to contribute, you have until August 23rd to get your application in. And so let me stop there and see if any of our commissioners have any questions about this process. All right, hearing none, we can go on. Next slide, please. So I recently had a chance to attend a conference on peace, resilience, and transformational justice in Rwanda, Africa. So for commissioners that hadn't heard from me in the last week, that's where I was. I was actually in Africa, and I was part of a 15-member cohort that was organized by Auburn Theological Seminary. And just so that the commission as well as the community know that the expenses for this trip were covered by the host organization. So CPOC did not pay for my expenses to go on this trip in case anybody has any questions about finances. There were approximately 69 applicants to be a part of this 15-member cohort, and I was among them. And one of the reasons that I was chosen was my work on police oversight. And so I think it's really important that the people that were selecting the members of this cohort saw that this work in Philadelphia and this work generally was important enough to be able to sponsor me to go. And so I'm gonna just play, if we can go to the next slide, I'm just gonna play about 2 or 3 minutes of this video that kind of just gives you a flavor of what the conference was about. And then we'll continue on to the rest of my report. So if we can just start it from the beginning, direct the guy, and then I can let you know how we will.
Jody's actually sharing this up. She's prepping.
Okay.
You have to switch from PowerPoint to the YouTube.
And then gotcha.
Just to reshare.
So if we can start it from the beginning, that would be great.
I think the sound isn't going over, Jody. Might have to unshare and reshare and just make sure that the sound is prompt. Well, then I might be able to do it. Can everyone see that video? Here's now.
We gather here to commemorate 30 years since the genocide against the Tutsi and sharing experiences about listening and leading, about peace and justice. We are always reminded of our shared responsibility to foster peace, resilience, and transformational justice. We begin by honoring the memory of the victims of the genocide against the Tutsi, a dark chapter in our history that claimed the lives of over 1 million people. The legacy of this atrocity continues to shape our collective conscience and our commitment to never again. It is through remembrance and education that we ensure such tragedies are not repeated. This conference serves as a platform for reflection, learning and action. Peace is not merely absence of conflict. It is the presence of justice, equity, and respect for human dignity. Resilience is the capacity to recover, adapt, and thrive in the face of adversity. It is to know that yes, the challenges are there, but I, at the same time, am the one to get them over. I was here.
Director Guy, we can go ahead and conclude the video. And so I will say that this was a very profound trip. What you saw was the opening of the conference. The opening of the conference actually happened inside the Rwanda Genocide Memorial. And one of the things that's very profound about this memorial, you can go to the next slide, is that not only is it just beautiful and it actually gives the history of the genocide, but actually buried at the memorial is a mass grave of 250,000 Tutsis that were killed during the genocide, which was 30 years ago. And so you can see a picture there of the cohort. There we are, you see me in the very front. It might be a little hard to see, but I'm right there in the front row and made a lot of phenomenal contacts. As you can see, this delegation was from the United States. And so my hope is to continue to build and continue to work with my cohort members to expand and or develop programs that are about peace, resilience, and transformational justice. And as that work develops for the office, I will keep the commission informed. But I think this is really an opportunity for us to find partners that people may not see as natural allies. So organizations that see their work more around peace or restorative justice, I think this is really just gonna expand our toolbox, expand our connections. And so that's why I feel it was very important for me to accept the invitation to go and to bring back the learning. So just look forward to some events in the future that have to do with building on this foundation around peace, resilience, and transformational justice. So I will stop there. That kind of ends my director's report, but I want to see if any of the commissioners have any questions or comments about this this work that I was doing in Rwanda.
Thank you. I'm just honored that you were chosen, that somebody from CPOC, our executive director, was chosen 30 years. 30 years is a very, very long time. Due to time restraints, we weren't able to see the whole video, but I encourage everyone, the video is in the chat. When you do have time, we'll check out the video as we will adopt portions of this or maybe the ideas of it moving forward. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Say to the commission, one of the visions I have so far, just one, is I would love to take a delegation of young people from Philadelphia to Rwanda. So young people that have been impacted by policing. I know that one of our own commissioners, Elder Du Bois, does a camp, et cetera. So I'm hoping to try to make some connections around funding that effort, but that's one of the things I feel is really important, is to take some of our impacted youth there. And maybe the hope is also to have some of their impacted youth here. So.
Elder. Hello?
She's not clear.
She said she was, one of her visions was taking the youth to Rwanda, and she said she knows you have a camp, and she would like to take your youth, and she's searching for funding to do that.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions from the director's report for any of the commissioners? All right, well, we will move on to our next area of report, and that's going to be on our complaint. so I'm going to ask if Director Guy can take over this next session and talk to us about the complaint data.
Yes. Good evening, everyone. Just going to mute you, son. Welcome, everyone. So CPOC has referred 16 complaints to Internal Affairs in the month of July 2024. This brings our total complaint referred to 107 for our total for this year. This breakdown, you can see in these graphs, sort of the distribution of race as well as gender as reported by the individuals who filed the complaints. Next slide. This is a breakdown of all of the different types of allegations that we've seen from these 107. And just to let you know that, as it's noted on the slide, one complaint can have several allegations in it. So this is sort of a total of every allegation that was submitted and looked at based on what was reported to CPOC. Next slide. The second biggest breakdown of allegation type was department violations. And we sort of like to break this down to sort of give some more context, because department violation can be a little confusing what that means. You'll see that sort of the two biggest types of department violations were improper stop or detention, as well as violation of a PPD directive. And that is, of the 28.84% of total allegations that were departmental violations, this is the breakdown of that percentage. And again, a single complaint can have multiple allegations. And that also goes to departmental violations. So you could have two different types of department violations in a complaint. Next slide. This is the map of just where we've seen the complaints. The darkest red is where we've gotten between 7 to 9, and the lightest area is between 1 to 2. And anything that's sort of a little pale white is where we haven't received any complaints. And that's not to say the complaints have not happened there or submitted. These are just complaints received by CPOC and referred to Internal Affairs. Next slide. So as we started last month, a little tradition of trying to give some context and anonymized information of complaints that were seen, just to give the residents an idea of what types of complaints were seen. So I'll read a few of these. Complainant alleges that their brother was walking home with his friends when another group of kids robbed someone and stole a vehicle. The complainant alleged that PPD officers stopped their brother and his friends from their crime. The complainant alleged that her brother told the officers to check the video footage of a nearby restaurant where it happened, but the complainant's brother and his friends were still arrested for a crime they didn't commit. Another one, the complainant believes that PPD improperly stopped them while they were driving and conducted an improper search. During the stop, PPD officers took the complainant's phone and wallet, put the items back in the vehicle, and did not allow the complainant to retrieve the phone or wallet before the vehicle was towed. The complainant stated that they were left with no phone, no money to contact anyone and get a ride home. Complainant also alleged that the vehicle was damaged during the towing process. Another one, a complainant stated that they called 911 because their mother's driveway was blocked by a neighbor's vehicle. A PPD officer responded, but the complainant later visited the second district and there was no information and the police had not created a report or a DC number for the incident. Next slide. Since spring of 2022, the complainant and their spouse have made numerous 911 calls about the loud, disruptive music played by both their neighbors and an unlicensed bodega. However, the complainant attests that it is very rare that PPD officers arrive to the scene after the 911 calls, and when they do, the officers just drive without stopping and don't ask the complainant's neighbors or the nearby bodega to turn down the music. Another complainant stated that people are selling drugs in front of their home and that unknown individuals have been riding motorbikes and scooters at night when they're trying to sleep. Complainant alleges that they reported these issues to the 15th district multiple times. Nothing has been done. The complainant also reported that when they called, an officer did not respond to the location during the most recent call, and the officer laughed at them and hung up the phone. Complainant reported that they've been provided with no proper service and have been treated unprofessionally. The last one, the complainant said that their wallet and other personal belongings were stolen during an incident on May 1st in 2023, so over a year ago. And when they went to the first district to file the report, they were told by an officer that the complaint, that their complaint would be assigned to a detective and they would follow up with them for the investigation. However, as of July 5th, when they reported to us their complaint, the complainant has not received any updates or information on this investigation. I think those are the end of my slides. I don't know if any of the commissioners have questions about any of this complaint data.
Yeah. I tried to link you in.
I don't know what the heck going on.
Did you have a question, Hassan, or did Commissioner DeBose have a question?
Do you have a question? Neither one of us have a question.
Okay, great.
So let me also say this. We are still developing the summary, so they're going to probably next month look very different. I'm working with Director Guy on a different way to present this because I think that it's very important that you all see all the summaries of every complaint that comes into our office each month. And so we're going to get a list of all the summaries. And then we also are trying to capture some data. I think it's some important potential. We capture it on the first few slides in terms of what we've seen for the year. But I think it's important to also put this data on what we've seen for the month in terms of race, gender. I think it's also important to even look at police district or council district. So Director Guy and I will be working on this. And so it'll probably look different next month, but we're evolving and moving forward. So I'm excited. So any questions at all for Director Guy before we move to the next department? All right. Well, next up is our auditing and monitoring unit. And so I will turn that over to our director.
Hi, everyone. So our unit is continuing to conduct our regular audits of complaints against police. Our audits are systematic reviews of these investigations that are done when individuals file complaints against police, and those complaints are investigated by Internal Affairs. We had our first auditing report released last month in July, and we had a great community town hall on July 23rd. That presented that report. We talked a lot about the investigative process, how Internal Affairs works, and we revealed some of the findings from our first auditing report. So the recording for that meeting is on CPOC's YouTube channel. I see Danny just posted a link in the chat for anyone who wants to view it. The report's available on our website if you wanted to take a look at that, and there's some stuff on our social media about that as well. So it was a great conversation, and thanks to everyone who came out for that. You can go to the next slide, please. So we have a really big update to complaint auditing this month. In July, we started a new version of auditing where we are now conducting our audits in real time. So that means that we are now reviewing Internal Affairs investigations before the investigation is closed. So previously, we were reviewing the investigations long after they had been finished, after an officer had received discipline, if they had been found to have committed misconduct. Now we are reviewing them before they have been reviewed by the top leadership at the department. So we're able to provide feedback and give criticisms to the investigator and call out any things that we think should be fixed and make recommendations to them. So we're using the same series of questions to assess each investigation. So we're making sure our reviews are consistent and we're looking at every single case in exactly the same way. So again, this is a very new process. We started reviewing these files on July 2nd. So it ended up happening pretty quickly. And so we are in real time developing our data collection and how we are going to track all this information on our end. So I can give some takeaways from our first batch of these audits, and I've put some of that in the slides that we're going to go through. I just want to highlight that this new version of auditing is unprecedented. CPOC and PAC previously didn't have this type of access to case files. So this is a really exciting new thing for us to be doing. We're able to impact these investigations while they are still open. We're working cooperatively with the department to receive these files and go through them. And then again, it's in development. So we'll continue to work on this as a process, get our workflows figured out, make sure everything is smooth, and we'll continue to provide updates as we go through this. So next slide, please. So again, we started receiving these files July 2nd. And how it works is we receive a digital copy of a case file, and then we have 10 business days to complete our review and notify PPD if we are going to provide feedback about a case. So we send specific recommendations for each case at the case level back to internal affairs. So after reviewing a case file, for example, we may find that the investigator should interview all the officers who were present during the incident or explain why officers were not interviewed. So if an officer is maybe out injured or left the department, or there's some reason they can't be interviewed, that should be clearly stated. Or if there are other officers who can be interviewed, who should be, then the investigator should go ahead and do that. So between July 2nd and July 31st, we received 32 of these files, and we were able to review 20 of those before I created these slides. So we are continuing to do these reviews every day, so the number is just going to keep growing, but the data that I'll provide in the next few slides is about these first 20 cases that we were able to do. And in these reviews, we're able to look at all case file materials that are sent over by the department. So that includes interview memos, body worn camera footage, if applicable to the case. So we're reviewing whatever they're sending us, and so far it seems pretty complete. So that's been a really exciting thing. Okay, next slide. So of these 20 cases that we reviewed, this is showing the encounter type that sort of gave rise to the incident and led to the complaint being filed. The most common encounter type in this batch of audits is vehicle stops. So of the 20 cases we reviewed, 7 of the incidents originated with a vehicle stop. The other types of encounters are pretty evenly spread out throughout some of the categories. Call for service by the complainant being the next most common reason that someone was interacting with officers. Next slide, please. So another thing we talk about every month, and I know is a big focus for the department, was are the investigations being completed within 90 business days, which is a guideline that's set for an investigation timeline. So out of the 20, 19 of them were completed within 90 business days. So that's a really great thing to see. They are moving through these at a good pace. I want to note that 8 of these 20 complaints that we reviewed or investigations we reviewed, 8 of them were first complaint. So that's a special type of investigation that's done by the department that isn't as thorough. It's when officers have a first complaint against them regarding verbal abuse or lack of service only. So it's kind of a fast track way to resolve a complaint against an officer when it's their first complaint of a less serious nature. So it's resolved without a full investigation, but the complainant still gets interviewed and the officer gets talked to by their supervisor. So those cases tend to go pretty quickly. So 8 of the 20, again, were that type of case. But in our group this month, only one wasn't completed within 90 business days. And that one was a complicated situation, and we found it to be a good reason that it wasn't completed within 90 days. Okay, next slide. We always are looking at if investigators are making the required contact attempts to civilians who are either making the complaint or may have witnessed what happened. So our reviews found that for 6 of the cases, they did make the required contact attempts, and in 6, they didn't. So about half and half, when there were civilians who needed to be contacted, they didn't make the proper contact attempts. So again, something we're always gonna keep an eye on. And when we are sending feedback on these cases, we're always saying, make sure to contact everyone who should be contacted for this case. They have very clear procedures at internal affairs for how many contact attempts they're supposed to make to these complainants and to witnesses. And if they aren't doing it, we're definitely gonna make a recommendation that they should do that. And another one, the top graphic on this slide is talking about how we look for language that comes across as being not neutral. So if an investigator is using language that is showing any favor towards one side or the other in the investigation, we highlight that. And we didn't find any examples of that in this batch of investigation. So that was heartening to see. No obvious signs of any like bias or impartiality present in the language used in these reports. So that was good to see. Next slide, please. So we're always looking to make sure that every allegation that is raised by complainants is included, that those are all included in the PC memos and are all given a finding. So it's something we look really thoroughly for and are always going to notate when any allegations were not addressed. So in slightly under half, all of the allegations were addressed, and in slightly over half of the cases, some allegations were missing. So we spend a lot of time in our feedback to the department on these cases saying exactly which allegations we saw that should have been included and need to be addressed in order to resolve the entirety of the complaint that was made. All right, next slide. And just to highlight some examples of the allegations that do sometimes are missing from the conclusions page. This month in our reviews, we found that a body-worn camera violation, that was the most common thing that wasn't captured in the investigation. So by reviewing body-worn camera footage now, in our reviews, we're able to see if officers maybe aren't activating properly, they're turning their cameras off early or starting them late. And so when we see that, we want to make sure that officers are being held accountable for that, because body-worn cameras are such a critical tool for accountability. And the only way that they can work is if officers are using them properly. So we're going to keep paying attention to that and make sure we note it anytime we think an officer should be held accountable for that type of violation. Next slide. So out of these 20 cases, I mentioned we provide feedback for each case to the department. So in our first batch, our first go around of these, half of these cases, we ended up sending feedback memos to the department, and half of them, we found no issues that we needed to raise and didn't have any feedback to give them. So I'm not quite sure what to make of that rate at this point, because it's our first batch. If this is gonna be how it goes from here on or not, I think only time will tell, but we're making sure to send feedback when it needs to be sent and get that to the department. We're still working on the next steps of this process, so we're sending our feedback to them, but we don't really know what's going to come back to us from them. And so that's a conversation we're still having and figuring out what they're going to do with our feedback and how we can track the results of these reviews. So next slide. And this is kind of to wrap up. Our goals are to keep reporting on our work that we're doing with these reviews, collect data, and understand if our recommendations are impactful, and then use data to generate recommendations to internal affairs based on the trends that we see. So it all takes time to develop data collection and good reporting on that, but it's a priority and we're gonna keep working at it. And I think that's it for my slides.
Comments or questions for the auditing and monitoring unit? Any questions? We're going to turn now to our investigation unit. I'm going to ask if our director for investigations can lead us through this next part of the presentation.
Thanks, Tonya. This is Nick Cotto. I'm the director of investigations for CPOC. We wanted to take a few minutes today to give an update on police shootings. And this update will include sort of two buckets of police shootings. The first one will be pretty short because it's police shootings of people, and the second one will be sort of year-to-date review of police shootings of dogs and a plan that we have moving forward with some dog shootings. So There were no police shootings of people in the month of July 2024, which keeps the year-to-date total of 9 police shootings. And that includes every single time Philadelphia police officer discharges their firearm at a person, regardless of whether or not those shots make contact with the person. For these police shootings, we receive call that the procedures that will receive a call that a shooting has occurred. We'll go out to the scene, meet with the investigating team there, and subsequently, shortly thereafter, receive documents, body-worn camera footage, statements about the police shooting, and review it to see whether or not it's in policy. We go to the next slide, please. So the same procedure applies also to dog shootings, and we have been looking at dog shootings as they've occurred through the first half of 2024. And because there were no shootings of people, we thought it would be valuable to share at least sort of a mid-year update about how the police have been handling certain encounters with dogs and the plan that we have going forward. So this portion of the presentation is sort of twofold. We'll provide an overview of the dog shootings that have occurred in 2024, and then also say a few words about our intent to conduct a comprehensive sort of year-end review of dog shootings and the related policies. I'll be talking about some of the statistics in 2024, and my colleague Jeff Hussein, who's a staff investigator here, will talk a bit about some of the scenarios that we've seen that have led to some of the dog shootings in 2024. So to date, there have been 10 dog shootings. 8 of those resulted in the dog's death. One of those shootings was by an off-duty police officer. The other 9 were all on duty. 2 of the shootings were not captured by BWC. So that means one of those is the off-duty case, and the other is one that was on duty and not captured by BWC. And in 2 cases, officers attempted to first deploy a taser or their electronic control weapon before moving to their firearm. And that'll be something that we'll be looking at moving forward, is how the police would move through a continuum of force as they encounter dogs. At the bottom of this slide is just fairly simple graphic showing the dates where we do have dog shootings. And as you can see, there's not a ton of pattern to them. We have one in January, a lull for a few months, and then a pretty big group between April and May. 2 in June, and then the last shooting was July 4th. If we could please go to the next slide. Thanks. Great. So the next couple slides I'm going to talk about have to do with the policies that PPD has in place about dog shootings. Before we get into the specific language of the policy, I thought it would be also important to remind the public that of a few things that we've seen in these cases that sort of frame the application of the policy to the facts. And one is the officers respond to many, many calls actually involving dogs, but a very small percentage of those interactions result in a dog being shot. So that is another sort of statistic that we'll be looking to have towards the end of the year, is what percentage of calls involving dogs actually result in the dog being shot. And it's also important to remember that it's very, very unlikely, nearly impossible, that an officer would begin their shift thinking, oh, I want to shoot a dog while I'm on duty today. And indeed, in the cases that we've reviewed, it's fairly apparent in a number of cases that officers are fairly distraught when they actually have to shoot a dog.
Yo, I bet these officers are more upset that they've shot
a
dog.
So the review is not necessarily to go after any specific officers, but it is to look critically at the policy and see how
the police have shot 10 dogs so far this year.
For the dog's owners and for the officers themselves.
But they were like, these police officers are so distraught. And I was like, I bet some of them know shoot a person. And they're like,
that relates to police uses of force. And a subsection of that policy specifically addresses discharges involving animals. So 10.1.B.1 provides that officers shall not shoot a dog. And the bolded part reads, except to protect themselves or another person from physical injury, and there is no other reasonable means to eliminate the threat. And further in the subsection, when on location with an injured animal which is not presenting an immediate threat to the officer or another person, every attempt shall be made to confine or contain the animal and notify police radio and have them contact ACCT. And so really, when we're reviewing these cases, one central question is whether or not the shooting complied with the bolded provision there, which is trying to determine whether or not the animal posed a threat to the officer, and also there were no other reasonable means to eliminate the threat that the animal posed before moving to the firearm. If we could please go to the next slide. Thank you. And there's a companion policy in PPD Directive 3.2 that has slightly different language, so I wanted to highlight that as well. These are procedures relating to vicious animals. The definition of vicious animals in the policy also does include dogs, so it should apply. And it provides that any police officer observing a vicious animal that presents an imminent threat, safety or health hazard to the community will ensure that the animal is ensnared, removed, and transported to ACCT. And so one question that we'll have as we do these reviews and provide more information in the future is how 3.2 relates to 10.1, because 10.1 has certain provisions about taking every reasonable means to avoid shooting the animal. And this has language that says, will ensure that the animal is ensnared, removed, and transported. And then 3.26 also provides that the deliberate shooting of an animal is considered a deadly use of force and justified only under the guidelines and provisions outlined in 10.1. And so we'll see, one of the goals is to break these policies down, have a review of them and see how they apply to the dog shootings to date and the dog shootings that may occur in the future. So what we're going to do is I'm going to hand the virtual mic over to Jeff, who will talk a bit about more narrative, what we've been seeing in the types of cases that have led to police shooting animals in 2024. And some of the issues that we've seen, aside from the unfortunate fact that the dog has been shot. So, Jeff, I'll let you take it away.
Thank you, Nick. Good evening, everyone. Go to the next slide. Get into some of the breakdowns here. So, as Nick said previously, there were 10 dog shootings year to date, and I'm just going to break down some of the reasons that police officers were called to the scene or on a given scene. So scenario one was the most common, and there were 5 police shootings in this category, and it was when officers were called for reports of a dog attacking a human or a person in the area. The second one was when there was a 3 different shootings of dogs while they were attacking other animals or other dogs. As far as I know, this year it was dogs and dogs. Sometimes in previous years there have been other animals involved, but so far the 3 shootings were dogs versus dogs. And the third scenario that we saw was a dog shooting while officers were serving a warrant. So they were at a given property inside a home, trying to clear the property, and encountered a dog that was charging at the officers. And then the final scenario there that Nick had mentioned a little bit was the off-duty police shooting. And in that scenario, an officer was off duty on their way home and witnessed someone being attacked by a dog, and they were called over to assist, which then ended in the police officer shooting the dog. Next slide. So some of the things that we're evaluating and some of the issues that have popped up in this last year and have been some public safety issues, including officers making sure that the backdrop area of the and the direction that they're firing is clear, and we're evaluating, you know, their procedures of clearing areas of civilians in any way possible when it's possible, giving verbal commands to citizens to stay back, and, you know, controlling the area that a dog can be in, and then assessing the situation from there. The next thing has been the force continuum. We're looking at what additional training officers have for animal scenarios and what additional training they could gain in the future, and things that we could recommend. We also have been looking at additional tools that they use in the continuum. As mentioned previously, tasers were used by some officers in some instances. We want to make sure that that's within policy. Do they have other devices? Like there's ACT possesses the control sticks that can, you know, put a harness over the neck of a dog and get it corralled. Do officers all over, are they trained on those? Do they possess them all the time or only some officers? Like, what is the situation there? And then continuing in that kind of same idea, we want to make sure that PPD, when they have planned police activity in a given area, let's say like the scenario we talked about previously, where they're serving a warrant and they have times when they're
Looks like Jeff's internet might have frozen.
Yeah, I think he might have froze out.
I'm here.
Oh, there you go. Here you
go. I'm not sure where we left off there, but just during planned police activity, when they're serving warrants or things that it's very imminent that they could be encountering animals while they're at a given scene, we just want to ensure that they have the proper tactics and equipment prepared so that they can assess the situations properly, and so they're not just going right to their duty weapons unless they really need to. I think we can go to the next slide, Nick.
Those are the end of the slides. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah. So we're collecting all this information and continue to do these analyses that is going to drive both a sort of investigation function as we continue to look at these cases, continue to review body worn, to review reports and apply the policies. But as you can already tell, this also involves some policy questions and some training questions as well. So we're looking forward to working with other units in the office to bring some information, whatever form that takes in the future, that provides A, some statistical analyses, and also perhaps some recommendations or issues that we're spotting about what is happening to year to date. Because one thing I sort of forgot to mention in the beginning in terms of statistics is the number 10 of dog shootings in the first half of 2024 is a significant upward tick in the rate of animal shootings in Philadelphia. I think the last reliable statistic that I saw was from 2018. And in that year, I believe there were something like 16, 17, 18. And so if we continue at the same clip in 2024, we'll be well above those numbers. So if there is a way that we could make recommendations to A, get that number down, B, improve public safety and officer safety, and C, simply avoid having to kill a beloved family companion, that those are all laudable goals that we're working towards, and look forward to having something at the end of the year, maybe the beginning of 2025. So that's our presentation on dog shootings. I'd love to open it up to the commissioners to see if they have any questions. I see Hassan's hands raised.
I do have a question. It's about an animal attacking, well, a dog attacking another animal, specifically a dog. Is the policy reasonable when handling a dog attacking another dog? When it says, like, if it's a vicious attack, I think time is crucial. Is the policy reasonable for officers to withhold shooting when it's a crucial incident? Or does it allow them discretion? I just wanted clarity on that.
Yeah, if we could, Jody, I don't know if we can click back to 10.1. As we do that, I mean, Sherry, you sort of raise a very important point that we keyed on early, which is the ease, quote unquote, most straightforward application of the policy would be a dog attacking a human, right? And an officer needs to do something fairly quickly. And it becomes much more complicated. And as you can see, 10.1 doesn't provide specific guidance about what happens when it's not a dog attacking a human, it's a dog attacking another dog. And you could certainly imagine a number of scenarios where that is happening and there are people in the background. Within feet of a dogfight. And the question is what would be a reasonable use of force there to either shoot a dog, put a dog down, and whether or not, and I think that one of the key questions is whether or not that dog who's fighting on the dog poses a risk to the officer or other people. But the larger point too is, this policy is silent about all these scenarios, right? And so one question that we'll have moving forward, it might not be, how does this policy apply in any given scenario? The question might turn into, is there a way to revise the policy to provide better guidance to officers so they can make decisions that do balance the risk, right? The risk of discharging their firearm at a small moving angry object against needing to do something in the moment. These are all things that are very much top of mind.
I have a follow-up question if it's okay with the rest of the commission. Working amongst CPOC or with you guys in CPOC, I've learned that many times units work together. So who would determine the policy recommendation? Would it be the investigation unit, or would it be the policy unit, or would you guys just work together to create a new policy, if that be the measure that you decide to take?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we're certainly committed to is working very closely together within the units, especially if it's an issue like this that really does ask for sort of cross-pollination of ideas, right? An investigative team and perhaps a policy team, and or I know Some folks in the auditing team were very closely involved with a report issued by PAC in 2019 on dog issues. So there is some institutional knowledge in the agency on this issue. And I'm happy to tell you there's no pride in authorship for me. So if it comes from us, it'll come from us. If it comes from another agency, you know, we're looking forward to being involved as much as we can. And in terms of what that actually looks like, I think that will be a function of everything that we see at, you know, by the end of the year, what sort of cases we're looking at. It could involve a recommendation as to the actual policy. It could involve resources, right? Like Jeff was mentioning that there could be instances where an officer wants to do something, but isn't equipped with the tools to do anything but reach for the gun, right? And so it's not a policy issue, it's a resource issue. Or maybe the officer doesn't quite understand when a dog poses an actual threat versus is all bark and no bite. Mm-hmm. And that might be a training issue and not a resource issue and not a policy issue. So these are all things that there's, I could see that there could be a menu of things that we could recommend depending on how the cases shake out. But yeah, very much looking forward to working with the other units to drive something productive towards the end of the year.
I'll wait to see if any other commissioners have any questions before I go on, because I think this will lead into the next segment of Ms. McClary. Okay, no other commissioner has questions? Delighted. My next question was, how will we get this out to the dog owners? And I don't think that's more of a question for you. I think that will be a question for our outreach, right? Because to garner some feedback or awareness on this topic, we have quite a few people on here, but I'm unsure if the pet owners are here regarding this issue, so.
Interim Chair Bennett, do you want me to respond to that comment that you just made?
Director can come on and share with the community and the commission how we normally get these things out.
Oh, yes. So as you know, Director Cato said, you know, we do work together across the units. So this would be something that we would, you know, make sure that we are sending out to people using our, you know, our email list. We're posting it on social media. We're sharing it with our community partners. And perhaps, you know, if this is something that we may want to work with, maybe the police community relations team, if they also would like to share, you know, any information that we put together to get out to, you know, dog owners in the community in general. So, yes, we definitely work together. It is definitely something that the outreach team would help with sharing this information and educating the public on this issue.
Are there any more questions from any of our commissioners about anything that has been presented from the investigations team? All right, well, I think we can go to our next department. Our next department that we're going to hear from is the policy unit. So we can go to the next slide. And I'm going to ask that the director for policy can present the next section.
Hi, I'm Anastasia McCarthy. I am the director for the policy unit. I just wanted to highlight a couple projects that we're working on for you. So in July, the policy unit continued to work on all open projects, but we've selected these two to talk about today. One of the things that CPOC does is conduct use of force reviews involving the discharge of firearms. So internally, we have a data collection system that we've updated. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background on what use of force is and how we collect the data and information from these cases. So for background, when a member of the police department is involved in a shooting, the department's officer involved shooting investigation unit conducts a criminal investigation to determine if the involved officer violated any laws that warrant the DA's office to pursue criminal charges. Also, the PPD Internal Affairs also conducts an administrative investigation to determine if the actions were within department policy. Once those are completed, the Use of Force Review Board convenes. The Use of Force Review Board is comprised of members from the police department, mostly deputy commissioners from the police department, along with CPOC's executive director. So use of force reviews get sent, use of force completed cases get sent to our office from IAD approximately once a month. Sometimes there's a little longer the period between us receiving the cases, but the files that we get include a completed investigation by IAD along with the officer involved shooting investigation unit. That package will contain photos, videos, and witness statements, and any other pertinent case documents. So usually the policy team works with the investigations unit to kind of divvy up the cases, and then we will conduct a thorough review of the incidents, read through both the OISI and the IAD investigations. We also review department directives. We examine all the evidence that the department provided. We will follow up with the department if we're missing any documents or statements, just so that we can get the complete picture. So we also review the entirety of police action to determine if not only whether the shooting was in or out of policy, but also to determine if any administrative violations occurred. We'll also prepare a written memorandum to brief the executive director prior to her attending the use of force review board meeting. So I do have, if we can drop in the chat, the actual directive that discusses the use of force review board for your reference. When that meeting convenes, the board will review the incident, watch any related videos, and then take a vote on whether the officer acted in or out of department policy. The board will also make recommendations to the police commissioner about the incident, and it could be sent to disciplinary charging. The officer, one of the recommendations could be the officer needs additional training or for the department to conduct a review of PPD policy and methods. So I think we can go to the next slide. Okay, so internally, while we're conducting these reviews, CPOC implemented a new data collection instrument to log all of the UFRB cases that we receive. Internally, staff will complete 3 surveys to collect data on each case. These surveys are each capture very specific things about the case. The first being the general survey, which captures information on incident specifics, like the date, the district, the type of discharge, whether it be an intentional, unintentional, or animal shooting, and how many discharges were occurred and how many officers were injured. The second survey will capture information regarding the individual or, you know, in the case of a dog shooting, the animal, how many individuals were injured, the demographics, whether the individual was armed or not, how many times a person was struck, where on their body was struck. And then the third survey captures information regarding the officer involved, if they were on duty, where they were assigned, any administrative identifiers, badges, the make and model of the firearm, how many feet away they were, if the officer was injured, and the scope of injuries. So we do these surveys to ensure we capture all necessary information in order to analyze and understand each use of force incident comprehensively. So we warehouse that information, and we will be in our database, and we will be, you know, reporting, you know, and including this information in the annual report, and also using the information, you know, to bolster recommendations and anything that involves the use of force. So if there's any questions about our data collection methods or use of force review, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, we can move on to our next project I'd like to highlight. Okay, I think we can move to the next slide. So the policy unit is collaborating with the outreach.
Director McCarthy, I wanted to say something about the use of force data.
Oh, I'm sorry. Absolutely.
For the commissioners, I think that, and for the community, it's really important to understand why it's important to have CPOC in the room for these discussions. Because a lot of times we are able to kind of step back and take the bird's eye view, right? The 180-degree view of these incidents, and it's really important in these situations to Monday morning quarterback. We're able to step back. The policy units are able to look at things and policies that need to be changed, and also things around training and other things. So it's really important that we're in these rooms. It's really important that the data that Director McCarthy is gathering is presented. Because you will be surprised the number of times when you can be very siloed and very focused that you miss the forest for the trees. And so we're able to help ensure that the community is safe because of these policies, but that also officers are safe. I mean, I often say sometimes when I look at some policies, like if I can't understand it, you know, as a person with a law degree, right? And we're looking at people and trying to make split-second decisions about things. We have to make sure that officers understand what the policies are, understand how it impacts community. And so I just really want to just underscore the important work that Director McCarthy is doing in this area and how it really impacts you all as the community.
Thank you. So the next project I'd like to highlight that we're working on is a collaborative project with the outreach unit. We are working to distribute a language access survey to better understand experiences and user experiences in the current state of language interpretation services for individuals interacting with the police department. So language barriers can significantly impact the effectiveness of police interactions. And by understanding the needs and experiences of the community, we are hoping to improve services. The information that we are obtaining through the survey may be used to inform policy recommendations or highlight areas for training and collaboration and provide information into what, if any, barriers to service exist. So CPOC is developing and translating information packets. I think we can move to the next slide. We're developing and translating information packets for distribution to community organizations. The packets are going to include, you know, an overview of CPOC, the purpose of the survey, and include our contact information. Our questions are going to cover primary language, gauge comfort in interacting or calling for police assistance, and just documenting experiences with language services that occurred during that police interaction. I think we can move to the next slide. the target audience for the survey is 9 non-English primary speakers, and it will be available in multiple languages. CPAC's going to distribute the survey to community partners, and staff will then be able to assist in administrating the survey. The survey has been translated into multiple languages. We're making sure that everything is confidential, everything that is shared with us. And it's relatively brief, about 10 to 15 minutes survey. So we are going to begin distribution to providers, and we're looking to identify more providers. So if anybody wants more information about the survey or has information that you think would be helpful in distribution, you can just email cpoc@phila.gov and put language access survey in the subject. So that's all I have, if you have any questions on that. Thank you so much.
Okay. Good evening. Good Tuesday evening, everyone. My name is Talia Grimmage, and I am the Director of Outreach and Constituent Services. I have the esteemed privilege of leading the team of superstars that you see here, some of who are actually out this evening at National Night Out. If you are unfamiliar with National Night Out, it is an event that takes place all over the country that really fosters community police relations. And so it's a good opportunity for us to get out there, spread the word about CPOC, and just be a partner to many of the other organizations that are engaging with the community.
Director Grimmage, before you move forward, do we give any room for commissioners to ask any questions of the policy unit? I think we kind of just went right to the...
I thought we paused for a moment.
I don't know if the international...
Oh, okay. I think my audio went out for a second. Okay. Just wanted to give people a chance to jump in there. All righty.
Okay. Next slide, please. So I would like to talk to you about some of the amazing things that have been going on and will continue to go on this month. You know, as we've stated before, you know, the outreach team is responsible for, you know, taking complaints with the rest of the staff here. We are the public-facing unit that is out in the community, engaging with people. We are responsible for putting together programming for our monthly town hall discussions that we have. We put together trainings. So there is quite a bit that the outreach and training unit does. We are more than just tabling, but when we table, we're happy to do that as well. So one of the things that we participated in recently is the Mandela Washington Fellowship post Q&A session. And so I'll just give you just a brief overview of the Mandela Washington Fellowship is a program that partners young African leaders with agencies and companies in the United States. They bring these you know, young people to America. They usually go to one of the colleges or universities, and they are there for a couple of months where they are doing some intensive training. And then at the end of that experience, they have what is known as the PDE. It is the Professional Development Experience. And so some of the students that have participated in the fellowship are then actually sent to some locations in the U.S. They begin a month-long interactive experience where they are actually stationed at, you know, an organization or agency, and they're there for the entire month of August. And so we are a longtime alumni of the Mandela Washington Fellowship Program. So we had the opportunity to participate in the host Q&A session. And so this session gives other hosts, new hosts, an opportunity to really ask some questions from some seasoned participants of the program so that they can get ideas on what they can expect, some tips on ways that they can engage with their fellows who are coming to their city. And so we have hosted fellows from Malawi, Burkina Faso, Madagascar. Last summer, we had a fellow from Namibia. And this year, our fellow is Sherelle Lauti. She is a forensic psychologist, the only forensic psychologist from the Seychelles Islands, and she is a sworn police officer of the Seychelles Police Department. And so Sherelle, she came just yesterday was her first day. She will be with us the entire month. And so the goal is to really expose her to, you know, policing in Philadelphia, Philadelphia culture. You know, you're supposed to be a good host. So, you know, Philly food and some interesting places that, you know, we want her to visit. But really talking about oversight and our role so that when she leaves, she goes back to, you know, her home country and she can take some of what she's learned back to where she's from. I should say she is also the officer in charge of the investigative psychology unit with the Seychelles Police Department. So this is a program that we are really, really proud of. We're happy to be a part of it because it gives us an opportunity to really have some international engagement, but really talk about policing from an international lens, you know, and really share some of what Philadelphia is doing with some people that may never have an opportunity to learn about us. Next slide, please. Okay. So again, the Mandela Washington Fellowship also partners with IREX, that is another organization, and they have a leadership summit. So this summit takes all of the students that participated in the Mandela Washington Fellowship, and they come together for this big event where representatives from all different organizations come together. They have workshops, they have discussions, they have tabling. So we went to the summit. It was in Washington, D.C. This was just maybe a week ago. And so, again, it's nice to be able to meet some of the students and different people that come from, you know, some of these African countries. And so as you can see in this graphic here, you know, people came over to our table and we just asked them to jot down some of their thoughts about policing. And so they were able to give us some feedback. We shared these photos and some others on our social media. So please follow us, like us, go to our social media if you'd like to see more photos from the summit. Next slide, please. Okay, so we have a really, really important event that is coming up on August 13th. And so this event is called The Right to Drive. It is a discussion on traffic stops, profiling, and policing. We're going to drop the link in the chat for our Eventbrite if you'd like to register. And so this event is one that we are really excited about. I'm telling you, if you missed it, you're going to be upset that you missed it. You're going to hear about it later. So please register to join us. We will be joined by Council Member Isaiah Thomas, who is very instrumental in the driving equality legislation. We will be joined by Valerie Castile. She is the mother of Philando Castile, the young man that was killed when a St. Paul police officer stopped him during a traffic stop. He was in the vehicle with his partner and her child. And he had a license to carry, but he said several times he was not reaching for it. And he was shot and killed anyway. So Philando's mother, Valerie, has really been able to take this moment of pain and really create this organization, the Philando Castile Relief Foundation, that honors his memory and his legacy. They support victims of gun violence, but they also, because Philando worked at a elementary school, they often pay the cost for school lunches for some of the elementary schools in the city that Philando was from. She's going to be joining us to share her perspective. We're very lucky that these people are coming to Philadelphia to talk to us. We'll also be joined by Jacqueline Carter. Jackie Carter, she is the founder of the Alliance for Safe Traffic Stops, and she is also the creator of the Not Reaching Pouch. And so the Not Reaching Pouch is a device that affixes to your car vent, and you can slide your driver's license, any other driving documents into it, and you don't have to reach for anything if you are pulled over by law enforcement. So I'm gonna show one to you. We were able to design a Not Reaching Pouch with CPOC's logo on it. And so this is what it looks like. And as you can see from the back here, this is what will go into your car vent. And so it is literally just a pouch. You can slide, you know, your driver's license, whatever it is, inside. and it stays on the dash. So if you have an encounter with law enforcement, you can just provide what you need to without having to reach anywhere else in the vehicle. We will have these available for anyone that joins us at our event. We're going to be giving them out because we definitely want to get this in the hands of the community. Our moderator for this discussion is the amazing Teresa Lundy. She's from TML Communications. She's going to lead this discussion. We are just really, really excited about this. And so I can't express this enough. Please share this information with your family, with your friends, other coworkers. Join us on August 13th. We have a welcome reception that's going to start at 6. And so we'll have some food, we'll have some conversation, and then our program is going to get started at 7. And so please, please, please join us. There's still time for you to register. Next slide, please. Okay. So the outreach team, we gave a webinar to the NACOL membership. NACOL is the National Association for the Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement. It is a organization of other oversight agencies in the US. And it's not just police oversight. Some people that are members of NACOL do prison oversight or oversight of other types of law enforcement entities. And so we hosted a webinar that was on strengthening stakeholder relationships. And so this presentation really aimed to educate and empower NACOL members and other oversight professionals to utilize and leverage some of the pre-existing connections and credible messengers already existing in the community. This presentation, it encouraged the creation of meaningful community engagement opportunities that include topics and subjects that go beyond the scope of policing. And so one of the things that we really are proud of at CPOC is the fact that we engage with the community even if the topic has nothing to do with policing. And so some people may say, you know, when you do some of these things, when you have movie nights, so when you have conversations with community members and the topic isn't policing, what does that have to do with policing? Well, the answer is nothing, but the answer is also everything. Because a lot of these issues and concerns that the community faces, they are jointly connected. And so when you begin to meet people where they are, when you begin to acknowledge some of the other issues and concerns the community has that maybe go outside the scope of your agency's mission, but you understand that they're still affected by it, you can really prove yourself to be a community partner. So that's something that we enjoy doing. And so we hosted a webinar just to talk to some other oversight agencies on ways that they can begin to do the same thing. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes you have stakeholders and messengers in the community that are already doing the work. And so if you can utilize some of them, that is a great thing. Next slide, please. Okay, so if you are interested in where you can see us next, as I stated already, tonight we're at a Field House Community Party for National Night Out. We are going to be at the 24th District. They're having a block party and community event on the 8th. On the 9th, this Friday, we are going to be giving our oversight lecture to the new recruit class at the Police Academy. On August 13th, I already mentioned, is our Right to Drive event that I'm sure and I hope everybody's registering for it right now. Of course, on the 23rd, that is the deadline to apply to be one of our new commissioners. We can drop the link again if people want to go and fill out an application. And of course, September 3rd is our next commissioner's public meeting. And then stay tuned for an event September 17th. That is going to be a town hall in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month. But the outreach team is always busy, so please stay tuned. And that's all I have for this evening.
Do we have any questions for Director Grimsden about outreach and training?
Okay, well, I'm available. If anyone thinks of anything that they want to ask later on, please let me know.
So So Chair Bennett, that concludes the office part of the presentations this evening. So I'll turn it back over to you. One of the things I did want to say was that for the commissioners, look forward to seeing some other new things on the agenda. One of the things I think is really important is for training. And so I will be working with Chair to talk about bringing some trainings during these meetings. And so training around various issues and oversight that you as a commission will be grappling with and that the community needs to understand. So next month, we're going to be talking to you all about data. Data. Why is it important that we're gathering all this data? So I'm looking very forward to bringing that presentation to you all to talk about the importance of that. I think we know it, but sometimes it's always good to have a reminder, and it's always good to think about it in this context. So looking forward to talking to you all next month and providing some information on data.
Thank you, Director McClary. Before we move on, we got one more matter of office business we would like to address. Anthony Arachi on the line. He's not? No? All right, well, Anthony Arachi has decided to move on from the commission. I would like to say thank you for his service to the commission, especially after becoming chair, him guiding and giving me advice on how to be a chairman. We've had over 2 years with Mr. Arachi, so I just want to state my appreciation for Anthony. I spoke to him personally, and I just want to inform the commission that he will be moving on. Next is community colloquy. I will give you the colloquy for the community comments. I apologize. I will give you the colloquy for the community comments. Be advised, I will be reading this so you guys can understand the rules clearly, and there's no different variation of the rule. This will be a continued reading throughout our meetings before we allow public comment. So I'll start. We welcome public comment and feedback. Please address your public comments to the chair. If you'd like to speak, please provide your full name, that is first and last name. We will not be unmuting anonymous participants. If you are a member of the media, please address yourself as such or identify yourself as such. You can indicate that you would like to speak by raising your hand or sending a request in the meeting chat. You may submit public comments through the meeting chat as well. You will have 3 minutes to address the board of the commission. I will beat your time and notify the board when it's 3 minutes have elapsed. Any document or follow-up communication can be submitted by email to cpop@phillips.gov. That is cpoc@phila.gov. Public comments should be limited to the topic covered during this meeting. All public comments must refrain from offensive language, threats, and harassment. Participants that violate these instructions will be removed from the meeting. Although we welcome public feedback, commissioners may not be able to respond to your question or comments during tonight's meeting. Every attempt will be made to follow up by phone or by email after the meeting. As mentioned before, you can contact us by email at cpoc@phila.gov. That is cpoc@phila.gov. Or call us at 215-685-0891. That is 215-685-0891. 911. With the colloquy being read, can we please have the first public comment?
If anyone would like to comment, they can raise their hand or put a question in the chat. I don't see either. Also, just add, Hassan mentioned Anthony is moving on. We're really excited for him. He'll actually be moving to a position with the public safety department in the city. So that'll be a great, amazing opportunity for him and for CPOC to have such a great advocate in that position.
So we got someone with public safety and we got someone in the sheriff department. We built in the city. Has anyone came in the public comments yet or made a request?
I don't have any questions in the chat and I don't see any hands raised.
With that being said, do I hear a mutant city motion to adjourn for wanting to make a motion? Commissioner Elder Melanie Du Bois motions for this meeting to be adjourned. Does any commissioner second that motion?
Commissioner Solomon, I'll second.
Commissioner Solomon seconds that motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Two ayes. Can I hear two more ayes?
Aye.
Yep, the meeting is adjourned.
If that motion passes, this meeting is adjourned at 7:55 p.m. This meeting is adjourned.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you,
everyone. In the chat, you'll also find a link to sign up for our mailing list if you're not already on it. Thank you for joining us.